The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
We have made it final hour of the program. We're glad you were with us on a Tuesday afternoon. Don't forget, tomorrow some of the biggest names in the SEC will join us live from the region's tradition in Alabama. Let's get to the topic that has been huge here for about 2 weeks, and that's the CFP. How do we figure it all out? We've heard from Bill Hancock, Coach Saban, Coach Smart. We have found somebody really smart, Brandon Marcello from 24/7. You don't need a committee. You just need Brandon. And Brandon joins us now. Great to have you with us, Brandon. Thank you so much. And I know you had to really knock your head against the wall to figure this thing out. So good afternoon, and tell us what you've come up with.
Well, for one, I am nowhere in the league of any of those people you just mentioned, let alone being smart. So I appreciate that, though, Paul. I've talked to a lot of folks throughout college football these last, 10 years, and, of course, these last 7 years of college football playoff. And, you know, this discussion of expansion and possibilities has been going on for at least maybe 2 years, if I look at my calendar correctly. And, you know, we're looking at a potential for 16 to 16, as they said in their press release in late April. But what are the more likely models that we're going to be seeing discussed here over the next few months? And I wanted to kind of explain that in an article I did earlier this week at 24/7 Sports. And so I looked at it, and from talking to some folks, it seems we're heading toward not just expansion, but a model that's going to be somewhere between 8 teams to 12. I from what I've been hearing, I don't believe we're going to see 6, and I don't believe we'll hit the big mark of 16. I think we're going to hit obviously a happy medium there, but the medium we're looking at is not just because, hey, it's a compromise. It's one where the committee, and for that matter, you know, the chancellors and the presidents that are making the decisions here, ultimately they don't want to be put in a position where 10 years down the road, we're revisiting this once again because we realized maybe, I mean, just a hypothetical, that 6 teams might not be enough, and we have some upset chancellors and presidents out there. So the obvious move forward for them is to more seriously consider an 8, 10, or maybe a 12-team playoff.
Brandon, give us the pluses and minuses, pros and cons of 8, 10, and 12.
Well, when you look at all those formats, what it does positive for everybody is that you can obviously guarantee a spot for a group of five champion, the top group of five champion in there, which this past season would have been Cincinnati. But when you start going into a 10-team field, you're looking at the possibility of there maybe being more than one group of five school in there. And not necessarily guaranteed, but you would guarantee it to one, but you would probably have five at-large berths that would be based on the rankings that they release, along with 10 automatic berths potentially. Excuse me, that was a 16-team model I'm looking at. I'm sorry. Let me go back to my notes here. Sorry about that. But you're looking at the possibility still of having two group of five champions in there, which that's not ultimately what you want to do, but you want to make the group of five happy. So any expansion we see, there's going to be a group of five invitation. There's no way they lock them out. But what you're also going to see is most likely a guarantee for every conference champion in the Power Five that will be automatically in, whether it's SEC, ACC, Big 12, Big 10, and Pac-12. And the reason for that is you're going to see a big push for that from Bob Bowlsby and the Big 12 and whoever and whenever Pac-12 decides to hire a replacement for Larry Scott. Because the Pac-12 has been pushing for this for quite some time because of their inability to even make the 14 field. But when you go through all these vines and everything I'm saying right now, ultimately we're probably going to land on a 10-team playoff or a 12-team playoff based off of what I've been talking to athletic directors and the feedback they've been getting from some of their presidents and chancellors. Now, does that mean that's going to happen? I don't know. We'll start hearing more in late June when the working group presents kind of their ideas to the management committee in Dallas in, I think, June 22nd. But until then, the talk right now among these athletic directors is they believe that their big push in this working group will probably end up being a 10 or 12 team field.
How would a 10 work? How would a 12 work?
It's a great question. You know, when you look through it here, a 12 team, we'll start with a 12 team, which this is the best format, I believe, and also from bouncing this idea and from hearing it from others. You'd have all the Power 5 champions, so that's five in a 12-team format. You'd have the top group of five champions, and then you would simply just have six at-large berths based on the rankings, which, as I said, would open the door potentially for two group of five schools and obviously multiple schools from the same Power 5 conference. So, for example, if you took last year's rankings from the SEC in that 12-team format, you would have, of course, Alabama. You would have Georgia as a 9 seed. You would have Florida as a 7 seed. So you have three teams from the SEC. On a really great year, you might end up having four teams from the same conference, such as the one we saw with the Big Ten a decade or so ago. But more importantly, what you see is the opportunity here for a lot of parity. I mean, you'd have Indiana in there. You would have Iowa State in there, two teams on the rise. And even Oregon, because they're a Power 5 champion. Now, this past year was crazy and wasn't normal, but you could have a two-loss, obviously, Power 5 champion in there with that automatic berth, and they could be playing the role of the upset team, so to speak, even though they're a champion. But what this would look like is you would have the top four teams with a bye. So Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Notre Dame would have that bye as the top four teams, with the others kind of playing their first-round play-in games, so to speak. And when you speak of play-in games, that's kind of what the 10-team format would look like. The 10-team format, based off the best format I've kind of figured out, is you would have two play-in games, so to speak. And for this past year, those play-in games would have been Cincinnati and Georgia in the 8-9, and then Florida and Oregon as the 7-10. And the format for that would be you get your two top group of five champions, your five Power 5 champions, and then four at-large berths based on the rankings. So very similar to the 12-team format, but you would have obviously less games in that opening round. And for this example, we would consider them play-in games, with Georgia, Cincinnati playing for a shot to play number one Alabama, and 7-10 Florida and Oregon playing for a shot to play Clemson. And in that way, one, you have that opening day drama, but you would reward these top six teams and mostly Power 5 champions most likely with an extra week off, and you would alleviate some concerns about adding extra games to the end of the schedule, which is obviously going to be something that comes up here when this working group and the management committee start having these discussions in June.
This may sound a silly question considering what's on the name of the network, but what's your best guess on where the on where the SEC fits into all this?
Well, they're going to have maybe the loudest voice in there, which is going to be interesting because I'm not so sure that the SEC, even when they start getting pushed maybe a little bit by the other conferences and even the group of five conferences, I'm not so sure that they would want to see expansion to four teams, to 10 or 12 teams, because even though the SEC would maybe get three, maybe four teams in a year and, of course, increase the payday, you're diluting things a little bit, maybe in their eyes, maybe diluting the product and the opportunities for the other programs outside the SEC to win a national championship. I think in the end, Greg Sankey will probably end up coming around to that, so will the chancellors, to getting to a field where it's as large as 10 or 12, because there will be a lot of pressure to do so. And we're so accustomed to hearing the SEC leading the charge on things. I think when it comes to this, we're not necessarily going to hear the SEC being the leader among the wolf pack of saying we've got to expand. They're going to probably be pushed along with this.
Brandon, before you go, there's so many other issues in college athletics, particularly the NIL, the Alston ruling, all these things that are coming up this summer. What do you hear and what do you think it's going to look like, assuming we get there this summer?
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. And I mean, listen, it really kind of starts before then because of the pandemic. Recruiting is opening back up for the first time in 15 months, June 1st. And though that's not going to change the face of college football. It's really going to kind of, I guess, increase the momentum to all these different changes and things looking different. And when we hit July 1st in the states of Georgia and Florida specifically, with the NIL laws going to effect there, I'm not so sure a lot of these schools are ready in educating their players to do this correctly and legally when they're trying to make money off their own names and, of course, through sponsorships and everything. So that's going to be something to really watch in the background, how these schools educate their players to not get in trouble and then overstep the rules, but also these compliance departments, because, boy, are they going to be busy as heck. But I think, obviously, we're seeing a shifting landscape. And I know we say that, it seems like, every 2 or 3 years, and especially when we had conference expansion and a realignment a decade plus ago. But this is going to be probably bigger than any realignment discussion we could have had even 10 years ago or 11 years ago when we were talking about maybe even it being bigger with Texas and Oklahoma going to the Pac-12. So we're in a position now where you're giving more power to the players, and these schools are having to figure out a way to help them, but also keep their own footing as strong as it has been financially. Because you're already seeing, because of the pandemic, but other things, them having to kind of pinch their pennies and save money and not go forward with some projects. They're going to have to find some different revenue streams and kind of take advantage of this new landscape. And so that all comes and is coupled with this college football playoff expansion. I think that the one undercurrent to all this that we're not talking a lot about is it's more money. It's more money for all the schools. And in the end, that's what they're going to need. And that's part of the reason, not the total reason, why college football playoff expansion is inevitable. These schools are going to need money, more money, if they're going to stand on their own 2 feet and continue to spend as much money as they want to, because, you know, the days of these, if we were to continue with this same business model right now, when we're introducing NIL and we're talking about the Austin case and about enforcement and whether schools should be paying players themselves, we're in an area here the next 3, 4, 5 years. These schools are not going to be making as much money as they used to if they continue to use these same revenue streams. So, for one, that's why college football playoff expansion is inevitable. But also, there's going to be more changes beyond what we see, you know, with NIL and obviously with this college football playoff expansion. We're going to see more and more talk that with the undercurrents going to be, how do we make more money? And there's going to be some interesting ideas floating out there.
Brandon Marcel, the national CFB reporter for 24/7, a lot to digest there. Brandon, always great to have you on. Thank you so very much.
Hey, thanks, Paul. Appreciate it.
Wow. Brandon laid it out. I mean, Brandon needs a break. That was some interesting concept that he gave us. So we'll take a break. Your reaction to that final 45 minutes of the program straight ahead.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
And we welcome you back. It's great to have all of you here. Bert is calling next. Hey, Bert, thanks. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. What an honor to be on your show.
Thank you.
I'm a part-time listener. Some of us still have to work for a living, so I just get snippets of your wisdom and brilliance in the afternoon when I'm in my car a few afternoons a week. Now, this afternoon, I'm sitting home waiting for a storm to hit North Alabama. But I wanted to get some input and get some advice or help me remember on the name, image, and likeness. I'm old enough to remember and I've got brain cells dying faster than kids entering the transfer portal. But when I was a kid, I remember that scholarship players could get part-time jobs in the summer, like washing cars at the car dealership. And where we are today is that dealer happened to be a booster. And, oh, yeah, I'll hire the players, and I'll pay them a little more than minimum wage. And, oh, wink, wink, if they don't show up for work, I'll still pay them. What's to stop that from happening again? What would stop a booster from getting his buddies together, put a slush fund together, and say, hey, if you come, I'm in Alabama, if you come to Alabama on scholarship, we'll pay you for your name, image, and likeness. And, oh, wink, wink, all we want is the team photo and roster. And it's not a real corporation, so we won't ever ask you to do anything, but we'll pay you $50,000 a year for your name, image, and likeness. Now, if there are 80 scholarship players, is that right? Whatever it is, that's $4 million a season. Now, that's a lot of money for you and me, Paul. Well, for me, that's a lot of money. But Alabama could raise $4 million before your show's off the air. And if they did that, then across the state, Mr. Yellowwood and Mr. Louder at Auburn would have to raise $8 million so they could pay $100,000 for every player. Do any of these states that have passed the name, image, and likeness, they have any kind of controls or checks and balances in their laws? Do you know what would keep that something like that from happening?
I don't think there is. We had a lawyer on and a law professor the other day from Florida. I asked him, was there a cap? He said, no. And we're having a governor on in a couple of days. I think this is what you've laid out. I mean, there may be technical violations, but who is going to enforce it?
Well, that's the issue. And you know, there's an army of lawyers out there looking for loopholes in these laws that haven't even been written yet.
Sure.
And what Mark Schlabaugh said earlier, there's got to be some kind of federal oversight or national oversight. But there's, like with the pro sports, they are franchises with a central governing organization. And the NCAA is anything but a central governing organization. And so somebody's got to say this is how it's going to be. But the problem is these institutions are by their nature nonprofit educational institutions. They don't play by business rules. And more than that, they are majority state-owned and run by state legislatures. They are not going to let the federal government come and say, you're not going to tell us how to run our institution. So they're going to pass laws that favor their state to bring players to their institutions and their schools. And that's the problem I see is with state-run institutions, you can't have a federal or universal umbrella to mandate these things unless the athletic departments decide, all right, we're going to organize as a corporation and franchise ourselves and voluntarily build some kind of system like pro sports have.
Well, what the NCAA is hoping for, Bert, and they're a little bit late to the party, is that Congress will do this for them. But I don't see this being a pressing issue for Congress right now. There's so many other things going on.
Well, but if Congress says something, again, these are state-run institutions. The state legislature in Alabama.
Yeah, but
no,
I hear
Congress, it. You're not telling me what to do.
I'm not trying to argue state law because I'm not qualified. But I think if the NCAA works out an arrangement with Congress, then I think the NCAA law would be the final arbiter yeah, you can seek relief from a state court, but I'm not sure it's going to matter.
Well, I agree that the NCAA is late to the party, and I think that that's part of the issue. These state legislatures have joined in, and I've always wondered where the NCAA came from, where they got their money, where they got their power, why schools align with them. And, you know, Paul, if you and I just wanted to come up with the Paul and Bert National Athletic Governing Association and said, hey, y'all join us and just pay us a little annual phenomenal fee and we'll govern college sports for you. Why couldn't we do that?
It's a good idea, by the way, Bert. We're considering how much money is at stake.
Anyway, but I see all the ways to abuse name, image, and likeness and paying players if it ever comes down to the schools doing that. And I don't see ways to control it. That's the problem I see. And I'm not against players getting paid. These institutions are making billions of dollars. That's not my issue. It's just I don't see how you control it when.
Yeah, but Bert, back to I believe, and I know what you said about the state laws, but I think the Commerce Clause is going to protect the federal government here.
Well, I think that would end up in the courts with state law saying no.
We're talking about chaos, but. It wouldn't be the first time. And, you know, considering how well the government works and operates, the case would still be going on after we're all gone.
Exactly.
Thank you very much for the call.
Well, thank you for taking my call,
very
Paul. I appreciate it.
You got it. Be well. We'll take a break here after that lesson in constitutional law. We will take a break, and your phone calls right around the corner at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
And welcome back. Final 30 minutes, and Zach is up next in Gainesville. Good afternoon, Zach.
Hey, Paul. I was listening to the podcast like Thursday, and I heard Squirrel was talking about how me and Matt's phone caller feud, or whatever you want to call it, was kind of like a pillow fight.
Right.
You got to realize, Paul, Texas A&M just got into the conference. I had a good experience with Texas A&M fans. Second, I like Matt somewhat, even though he was kind of rude, but whatever. I let it fly off me. You got to realize, Paul, like, I don't want to disrespect the whole fan base because I think I told you this before. Like, well, after Texas A&M beat us, a Texas A&M fan tapped me on the back and said, you know, you're a true college football fan because I act like a fool when I'm at the game. And, you know, usually other fans will rub it in your face. So.
Hey, Zach, first of all, don't worry about Squirrel. He's a curmudgeon. I frankly thought it was a good conversation, and you know we like to do that. It doesn't have to be a Game of Thrones just because two fan bases are having a chat.
No, but if like what was that? Is a Georgia writer? If he was talking some crap, he said something about Kyle Pitts, like he was targeting Kyle Pitts. He was a coward for saying that. Why would you want to say that about somebody?
But Zach, I don't know why. I don't know why anybody says anything. I just sit here and take the movie tickets as people come and go.
Yeah, but that was pretty absurd. But besides that, I don't know what Squirrel was talking about. But I can get into it with him. But it's whatever.
Hey, you did well. Don't lose a moment sleep over it. Will is up next. Hey, Will, thanks.
Get up. Hey,
Paul, three quick questions for you. First one, how long was Nick Saban coaching before he won his first national championship?
Well, I believe he had five years at Michigan State, and then he won it in his, I think his fourth year at LSU.
Okay, all right. So how many years has Kirby been at Georgia?
I believe he's been there 5 years.
Okay, all right. So third question, why is Augie so concerned about the little poor old Georgia football team?
I really don't know the answer to that.
Hey, I
don't know why I kept hearing myself, but maybe it was a Bluetooth. Hey, thanks for the call. Jeffrey is up next in Fort Worth. Hello, Jeffrey. Good afternoon.
Hello, Paul. Can you hear me?
I can. You sound well.
Hey, Paul. Fort Campbell, Kentucky, Paul.
Oh, it's great to hear from you.
Yeah, Paul. Being a Tennessee boy, I want to talk a little Tennessee football with you and Tennessee in general, Paul. The other day, I heard a caller talk about you and the Knoxville News Center, and I was a student there in the 80s, about late 80s, mid 90s, back when it was still a quarter system before it was semesters. I'm sure you remember that.
Oh,
Paul.
I do. I remember it well.
I got a question for you. You know, the Knoxville News Center, it was a second paper there in Knoxville called the Knoxville Journal. And the Knoxville Journal never could compete with that Knoxville News Center. So finally, the Scripps Howard Corporation bought out that journal. So now it's all the Knoxville News Center. But let me ask you a question, Paul. Do you remember being at UT and dealing with that Daily Beacon? Do you remember the Daily Beacon?
I sure do.
Paul, did you ever write for that Daily Beacon, or did you ever do anything with that Daily Beacon at all, Paul?
I was the sports editor for 2 years.
Oh, that's awesome. But that was probably before my time, because, like I say, I was late 80s.
Yeah, no, that's the long and short of this is I had never planned to go into journalism. I wasn't majoring in journalism, and I just happened to see an ad one day in the Daily Beacon for a reporter, and I went down there without really even being able to type, and I had an instinct for news, although I didn't really understand the mechanics, and they hired me, and here we are.
Well, I'm probably going to tell you why you was actually hired, Paul, because you got the mentality that you believe in people, and you always look for the good in people, and you showed that just the other day when our buddy from South Carolina, I want to say his name is Mitchell.
Mitch,
is that correct, Paul?
That is correct.
Mitchell, a caller from South Carolina, not even in the SEC. He's an ACC fan, but he calls you all the time and talks to you. But the way you treated that gentleman, Paul, you would have fit really good in the military as an NCO, because you treat callers the way an NCO needs to treat soldiers. I tell you what. I've been in the military now for almost 25 years, Paul, and over 23 active duty, Paul. And my goal is when I get out of the military, I'm going to go back to UT. Some way, somehow, I'm going to run through that T. That's my goal. Everybody's got a bucket list, Paul, right?
Well, that's a great goal, Jeffrey. And how much longer are you in the military?
Well, Paul, I'm holding in here till I hit 60. I'm enlisted, so when I hit 60, you know I'm done. So
that's an amazing career for an enlisted man.
Well, thank you, Paul. Now, I was 30 before I even came in. Like I say, I worked 10 years there. I used to work on the University of Tennessee. I went there as a student, and then I became back then it was called a work study program. They find you a place on campus. They found me a place there in the theater department. Clarence Brown Theater.
Oh, sure.
And then I worked. That was one of my part-time jobs. Then my other part-time job was I worked on the loading dock for the Knoxville News Center. So I did both of those part-time jobs trying to pay my way through a 4-year degree there at UT. I wanted to be in communications, public relations. which is what you would have really been good in, communications, public relations. I'm sure you've got a BA degree or what's your degree in, Paul?
Political science.
Political science, not even broadcasting. My God, a political science, not even broadcasting. And the career that you've had, Paul, is amazing. That's outstanding, Paul. It's outstanding. I just want to commend you for the way that you treat your callers, and because you treat your callers by your heart, by the way that you actually are as a person. Okay, so I guess I said enough about UT. Now I'm going to make a couple of statements, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
Well, this is what I mean. I say I'm a military man, but you know, I mean, listen, I've seen Phil Fulmer, I've Johnny Majors, I've seen Phil Fulmer, I've seen Lane Kiffin. I was a Lane Kiffin believer, but then he treated us like, you know, it's the girl that you asked to go to the prom, and then she goes home with someone else. You know, I don't know if you had that feeling, probably.
Oh, sure.
But that's the way Lane Kiffin, in my eyes, that's the way Lane Kiffin treated us. And I think he looks back on that today, and I think he sort of regrets that. A lot of people don't realize this, Paul, but he named his son Knox when his boy was born in Knoxville. He named his son Knox. So that was the commitment that he was going to give to Tennessee. When you name some loved one, you know, something, you know, attached to your university. And then I was a Butch Jones follower. I believed in Butch Jones there, and I still believed in him. I hate that he left. But after he left, I don't agree with some of the stuff that he did. I understand being going and getting as much education as you can, as much knowledge as you can off the best football coach in college. And correct me if I'm wrong, Paul, but, you know, he'll eventually pass Coach Bear Bryant. And years from now, when these people look back 20 years from now, Nick Saban will be the man that everybody says, well, I think in my generation he was the best college football coach ever. And you know, Paul, I'm a huge General Nealon fan, huge, because being pro-military, huge General Nealon fan, you know. And a lot of people don't realize this, but my grandpa and my daddy told me this years ago. They said, it looks like General Nealon and Bear Bryant don't really get along, but they really do. They talk all the time. They're really good friends. They're really good coaches, and they coach against each other. You know, I'm sure you probably know that, Paul. You probably heard some Bear Bryant and General Nealon stories over the years. Have you not, Paul?
I have, and you're right, Jeffrey. And I'll say this about General Nealon. I don't think he gets enough credit in the modern era because I think he's one of the four or five greatest coaches of all time. It has nothing to do with, you know, where I went to school. It's just I've studied him. I've read books about him. I've spoken to people, as you may have, who knew him. And, you know, his maxims of football stand today.
Absolutely, Paul. I totally agree with that. And for the University of Tennessee to put an acting coach in place of when every time he went deployed to go to battle, to fight with his soldiers and his men, and he would come back from a major function, a major war, come back and start that program back up again as a head coach. I want to say he did that three times during the course of his career. You know, at least three times my grandfather and my dad tells me that. They know at least three times that he left and went and fought wars and came back. And for Tennessee to hold that position like that for him, they designated an acting coach, you know, while he was gone. You know, that just holds a dear place in my heart. You know, any SEC football program that's pro military, I'm all about. Texas A&M, I'm all about pro military. That War Eagle from Auburn, at War Eagle. People need to research it to see what that War Eagle really.
Hey, by the way, I have to. They're telling me I need to go here, but I believe you just mentioned Auburn. Chuck Jordan, who was the Auburn coach, you may remember him. He fought in both the Pacific in the European theaters during World War II. He received the Purple Heart. I remember interviewing somebody about him once. He was quite a military hero as well. We have to run to a break here, but hey, thank you so much for everything and especially your service. We are officially out of time for this program. We appreciate all of you for being a part of it. Some really interesting guests today. We'll see you right here tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.